live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. And Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I've had this guy on, this celebrity, and I'm starting to get some celebrity buddies who I bring on a regular basis. But the way Justin and I met, Justin Tranchita, is hilarious. That basically he called in at 3 o'clock in the morning when I was doing a marathon of interviews live in Spain. He never got on live in Spain because of just how logistics worked, but we had such a we created such a chemistry. Came on a second time. I wanted to learn more about Game of Pawns, so I first want to welcome the program, Justin Tranchita from Game of Pawns. Justin, how are you?
What's up, buddy? I am currently at the Branson Landing, Branson, Missouri. 95 degrees. We got sunny skies. We got beautiful women. And we got old people singing songs.
All
it's
right.
Exciting.
So that's fantastic. And I know that you have the other person from Game of Pawns. So I'm so excited to welcome the program, celebrity Scott Velvet. Scott, how are you, man?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Fantastic. For our audience, tell us your background, Scott, for people who have not watched Game of Pawns.
Well, how far back do you want me to go?
what you do for a living and then how the show started. That's great. And then Justin can jump in on some stuff.
Gotcha. Well, I started out, my father owned the Elvis Presley Museums. And so I kind of got into celebrity memorabilia and that business. My father was also an entertainer back in the day. And so he kind of got me started on collecting and buying and selling celebrity memorabilia. And then, it rolled into cars, movie cars and celebrity owned cars and stage worn clothing and instruments and movie props and so forth. And then it kind of went into, we started a pawn shop, we started a car museum, and then we were approached to do a TV show about the pawn shop, that kind of put a different spin on it because they knew that I was into different things. I was into, Batmobiles and movie costumes and stage clothing and things like that. So people were bringing in different things. I had different things and a real different background than a lot of people.
So it's quite interesting. And they approached you about the show, and then I'm going to ask Justin how he got in this. And I have a feeling Justin always figures out a way to weasel in on something. Just kidding, buddy. But Scott,
that's true. Neil knows me.
But Scott, tell me specifically, once your approach for the show, were you like a little bit hesitant to try to do reality TV?
For me, I was just kind of, I'm the kind of person that, stuff like that scares me to death. Like, I have no need or want to be in the celebrity spotlight, you know what I mean? It's just kind of one of those things where you just have to kind of jump off the cliff, And so I don't even sweat about it. It's just like this interview, Justin told me about it like a month ago. And I'm just like, yeah, no problem. And then today I'm going, oh, gosh, I got a call. but I usually wait to worry about things until the very, very last moment. And then it's all good. It was exactly what I expected and nothing like what I expected at the same time. I mean, there was a lot of attention. There were a lot, I was expecting a couple, camera guys with GoPros. And here we had this huge, all of these people. We had, at times four or five camera people. We had producers and associate producers and all of these things. And I was just like, wow, all this for me. Because like I said, I was expecting someone to be following me around with like a handy cam or something, And it's like, I need a new VHS. Can you, So it was definitely interesting.
Definitely seems like it. And so Justin, so it's Scott's shop, as we understand, and he was approached by the show. How do you know Scott, Justin?
Well, I mean, Scott's, everyone knows Scott and Branson. I mean, the guy, he's kind of a mainstay here in town. He's got the big car museum with all the celebrity cars, Fast and Furious, all the cool little gadgets. The that us boys like. So I knew him from there. You know, I knew the cars. I knew he puts out a calendar, you know. So I actually, Brian Roman, who's a mutual friend of ours, who's actually on the show as well. I don't know where he might be fishing today. Is he fishing today, Scott? We think he might be fishing today.
I think him and his son are out fishing today, yeah.
They're out fishing today, ice fishing maybe in Siberia. I don't know. I can't tell you. But anyway, he was a mutual friend of ours, and he kind of put us together. They needed a funny guy on the show. They needed somebody to kind of be the idiot, which I'm pretty good at. So I stepped up to the plate and said, yay, put me in there and I'll act a fool, no problem. So it's been a lot of fun. Me and Scott have actually become really close friends. You know, when I first started on the show, you know, we liked each other, you know, we knew of each other, but we've all become real tight, you know, being on TV. It really, you know, people say we're a TV family and you think, oh, it's a bunch of crap, but it's true. You know, you get close just because you're around each other all the time, and there's always drama, and there's always, you know, something going on. So it's really been cool for everybody, that's for sure.
Well, definitely. Again, we're talking to Scott Velvet and Justin Tranchita from Game of Pawns, and Justin has a opening spot anytime. He's welcome on the Total Celebrity Show, and when we continue to grow together, we'll always say, hey, you know, maybe we'll think about doing the TV celebrity thing next, as I was talking to Justin, is that's what's so cool about radio. Now, let me go back to Scott now. Scott, tell us the premise of the show, because Justin could not explain it in two times I've had him on the show. So tell me the premise of the show. And then ultimately, specifically, your role on the show compared to Justin's, and how you guys are all friends, all three of you, but how's, like, the storylines go, especially if Justin doesn't own the pawn shop?
Well, basically, you know, it's just like any other pawn shop when you walk in, except that there's different, you know, there's cool stuff on the walls. People come in, and the premise of the show is basically, you know, someone walks in and they've got an item that they want $500 for. Well, you know, I look at the item and I'm like, man, this item, I might be able to get $500 for it. So I'll offer them, you know, $250 or $300. And then we haggle back and forth. We can't seem to get to the same price. You know, they're getting ready to walk out. And then I'll offer to play a game with them. And it's like, you know, I tell you what, let's play a game. I'll ask you three questions about your item or something to do with it. And if you can answer those three questions correctly, if you know more about it than I do, then you can walk away with the price that you were asking, say the $500. And if not, I get it for my price, which was the $300 that I offered you. And usually, you know, usually just the being there on the spot and the opportunity to be on TV, you know, most of the time I'd say, you know, 8 out of 10 times they go, okay, let's play a game. That sounds like fun. Let's do it. And, you know, then they would have to go off because it was actual, you know, there was nothing set up about it. They would actually have to go off and sign a contract with Discovery and, you know, that they would abide by the rules of the game and so forth. They would explain the rules, and then they would come back and we would play the game. I would ask them the questions. Brian and I would alternate asking the questions, and then, you know, they would win or lose, and then we'd get them paid. And, you know, one way or the other, we wound up with the item. And one of the unique things about our show, as opposed to a lot of other shows out there, is that every time you see us buy something, we actually bought it. It's sitting in our shop. We bought it. We paid them money, and we actually own it. It's not just, you know, for show.
Well, I want the DeLorean, so that's all I have to say. I remember seeing that on one of the things. I definitely want the DeLorean. So now I'm going to let Justin explain specifically during the show, do you just like to hang out at the pawn shop? Is that one of Justin's favorite things to do in Branson?
No. I mean, I worked in there too. I told the pawn shop, you know. So, I mean, obviously I'm an actor. Obviously I was brought in, you know, I think we get that. But I did work there while we were shooting, and when we shoot again, I'll work there. It's not like just hanging out at craft services, stuffing my face full of
noise. No, but that's Branson. Justin, remember, I was a pro wrestler. Those towns are like that. All you do is hang out. You know, I'm in Branson, and I'm just chilling, and I just decided to just go to a pawn shop.
I helped. But let's be honest. I'm there for one reason.
Your looks.
And that one reason is to make people laugh. I mean, just to be an idiot. I mean, that's
true.
What I do on the show.
Well, that's
true. I mean,
Justin would Justin would greet him as they came. Justin also had a business venture there with me, and he also helped out around the shop. He would, like, any time that we were having trouble with a shot or something, you know, he would just interject, and then all of a sudden it would work because, you know, we'd be doing something and it just wasn't working. And he'd just jump in and just kind of like off the top of his head, he'd say something. Everyone would laugh. It would work. And then we would go into that. So, you know, Justin kind of had a little bit more freedom than, say, Brian and I, because, you know, we were expected to come in there and, you know, buy or don't buy an item. Whereas Justin could, like, come in and go, you know, I think that item's crap, or you know, you should really get that, or he'd come in and say something funny, or he'd make fun of the people or us, or, you know, I mean, it was just, it really brought it all together.
All right. So now, again, I don't mean to do that to you, Justin. I know you well. I know your experiences in L.A., hanging out with the band and all the different things. But you bring that entertainment to the show, Justin. And once that show, everyone knows you in Branson already, but once that show aired and you would go all over the country, people would say, you're the guy from the pawn shop, right? That's where you're starting to get discovered, for, especially when you got on Discovery.
Well, and, you know, the funny thing is, me and Scotty were just talking about it. What I call him, my buddy. But anyway, you know, this show is all over the world.
Right, exactly.
So that's a creepy thing, because, I mean, not crazy, but weird. I mean, I got, you know, we have fans in India. 1.6 billion people live there. I didn't even know they were English speaking. I know that sounds bad, but, you know, I mean, their primary language is English. You know, Japan, China, Russia, Ukraine, you know, I mean, anywhere you can think of, the show is airing, and it's really fan. Discovery is just a hell of a lot bigger than I thought they were. I mean, they're everywhere.
They're definitely everywhere. And Scott, how about you now? Especially you're known in the pawn shop, but I'm sure you're traveling more than just Branson now. And they're like, hey, aren't you that guy from that show? That's what's happening now, right?
Yeah, I have that happen quite a bit. You know, a lot of times people are surprised because I'll be down at the museum. I come to the museum at night to close down. And, you know, I'll bring somebody up, and they'll be like, wait a second, aren't you the guy that did that pawn shop show? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, ah, yeah. And I'm just like, have you checked out pawn shop while you're in town? They're like, that's here in Branson, you know? and it's like, yeah, it's here in Branson. It's just down the road. And I'll give them directions, but people flip out. You know, and it's kind of weird. People are like, hey, can I have your autograph? And I'm just a business guy. You know what I mean? They just happen to film some business transactions. And so it's kind of weird because, you know, I'm not used to it because, you know, I'm not an athlete or an actor or anything like that, nothing special. I'm just, you know, a guy that's sitting there doing business and happens to deal in some interesting stuff.
Absolutely. Okay, Justin, now it's time to talk about projects because we got about 5 minutes left. Give us projects. Latest news for Justin.
Well, I'll be quick on mine and let Scott talk because I'm a talker. Everyone in America knows that about Justin, but I'll keep it real quick. I got...
That means 4 minutes, right?
My new CD is coming out in the fall. It's called This Is America. I got 4 tracks left. It's going to be awesome. I'm really pumped about that, followed by a tour. Hit me up on Twitter, at the singer Justin. Also, just had a movie that I finished called, Jesus, I forgot the name of the movie I just did. it's a Western, Thicker Than Water, there it is.
Okay.
Had a brain fart from it. I'll be doing the festival circuit. We actually have a sister show in town that's going to be on Reel. It's called Branson Taxi. And I know that we're both doing some cameo stuff on there. We're trying to support that. So just a little helping them out because our production company, High Noon, is a part of that. And then a couple more things. Branson Family is a show I'm doing. We've been shooting it. It's going to be on Comcast. I'm really pumped. It's funny. It's about 5 guys. Michael Haygood's in it with me. He's another singer. And it's about 5 idiots. I fit in real well. I got the Bulldog with me. And then, of course, in the fall, you know, we're looking to shoot season 2 of Game of Pawns, and that's what I'm really pumped about. So, I mean, that's about my plate's pretty full. Scotty, on to you.
All right, Scott, you promote, and then I'll ask one more question, see if we have enough time. Okay, what's going with you, Scott?
You know, for me, I'm just always looking for new cars, new movie cars, new things. The museum's always changing around. We got about 40 different vehicles than we had last year. Business is really going well. The same with the pawn shop. You know, we're working on a few projects. We're working on bringing a live show to Branson, which is still in its infancy, so I can't really talk about it. But we're working on that, and that should be real exciting too, because it's real cutting edge, and you know, state of the art type deal. But you know, it's just plugging away, and then you know, whenever the cameras are back, I guess we'll be doing it in front of them.
Do you have any places where can we find Scott? That's what we want to know. Then we'll get back to
you. Yeah. Get your website out there, Scotty.
We've got, celebrity. Let's see. One's BransonPawn.com is for the pawn shop. And then we've got CelebrityCarMuseum.com. And you can also find us on Facebook. Both of those places have Facebook. I'm on Facebook. I'm always getting requests now from people from India and China and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, look us up, see what we're all about. Check out the cars and the different memorabilia and stuff. I think people will enjoy it.
Well, fantastic. And so, Justin, I guess you can give us that latest update. So basically next year, once you're done shooting, that will be in Discovery all over the place back in the U.S. again, right? For sure.
Of course. Yeah, okay. Of course, we're pumped, man. I mean, I can't wait to do it again. I mean, I hope I get to be as foolish as last season. And it's always fun to come on your show, Neil. I think Scott's had a good time. I always have fun. Next time I need to bring on maybe I can get Shatner to come on with me to relive that night in L.A.
No way.
Buddy.
You can't get Shatner, really?
I'll talk to Shat, man, and see if he'll do it. I can't guarantee anything, but wouldn't that be funny to talk about the horse show?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
that would be funny. And then also, when Bobby feels better, we want to definitely have Bobby Venton on and all the different connected
Absolutely.
People you have in celebrities and say Justin.
He would have loved to be on. He's just not feeling real well right now.
Okay, we'll keep him in our prayers. Okay, good talking to you both, you guys.
Awesome.
Best of luck, guys. Take care.
All right, thanks. Thank you, buddy.
Bye-bye.
We'll see you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And the Celebrity Show he did definitely play in the NFL, and also he was a superstar at the University of Pittsburgh. But the reason I definitely wanted this guy on the program is he's one of my childhood heroes. The first basketball I ever saw next to the Denver Nuggets when I lived in Denver was the Pitt Panthers, and it was the days of the Eastern Eight. People are probably like, how old are you now? But one of my favorite players of all time, and he was a giant to me. And if Sam knew now, and I'm about to tell you who the name of the person we're interviewing, he would not be shocked to know I'm 6'10", 280 pounds. When I was a professional wrestler, I was 6'10", 310. So I became a giant myself in a lot of ways. So I want to welcome the program Sam Clancy, the University of Pittsburgh superstar, plus also the Cleveland Browns. Sam, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about you, Neil?
I'm doing fantastic. It's an absolute honor to have you on the show. I tell you right now, you're very humble, but I'm telling you, when we talk about Pitt basketball players, you're one of the all-time greats that Pitt's ever had, in my opinion, for sure.
Well, thank you. I tell you, being back home here in Pittsburgh, it keeps me humble because of nobody. No, I've been gone for 27 years from the city or from the university, and coming back and everybody, Sam, you're my best athlete. I have the best time at Pitt basketball, so it keeps me humble, and I'm honored for the people here in Pittsburgh.
Absolutely, and then hopefully by this they'll be like saying, okay, Sam's back to talk all these different things because you're such a nice guy, and we'll have to talk about that at the end, how you ended up getting back. But if I had two of my biggest wish lists is talk about Pitt basketball and talk about the Cleveland Browns experience, how you transitioned between the two, because I'm such a huge sports fan. So let's talk about specifically enough, when you got to the University of Pittsburgh, did you expect to have such a great career at Pitt?
Well, you know, when I got here, And I came here, one, because it was local. It was only about 10 minutes from where my mom, that's the reason I made the decision to come to Pitt, is I'm a big family guy, and I wanted my mom and my dad, who was a big part of my life and everything, and to be part of it to continue to be part of it. And then Tim Gergovich was the other one who was the basketball coach here. I was good friends with Gerg, and I knew him probably from eighth grade when coaches were allowed to just come around to see any player play anytime before compliance and NCAA really was big. Being here at Pitt playing basketball, it was a dream come true. It really was. I didn't think I would have the success that I did, though, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Well, absolutely. I mean, just to think about your career and the expectations and stuff. So locally, where are you from? I didn't know that. So you almost have the kind of a Dwan Blair story in certain aspects.
Yeah. Well, I'm from the Hill District.
Okay.
You know, yeah, I'm right there from the Hill District, and Dwan is from the Hill also. So we're similar in that, similar in size, similar from where we're our location.
Absolutely. I taught over at St. Agnes School right near the Hill. We ended up merging with St. Benedict the Moor, but I taught a lot of kids from the Hill with the Extra Mile Foundation. So.
My mom lived on Bedford Avenue, right down the street from St. Agnes, farther down, closer to the old Civic Arena.
Oh, wow. Awesome. It's definitely good times. I remember St. Agnes and a good Carl Krauser's daughter went there. Son went to St. Agnes, and also Brandon Knight. So there was a Pitt connection
there. Really a good school.
Yeah, now they merged, and it's St. Benedict the Moor, and the Extra Mile Foundation does fantastic things. Okay, Sam.
Yeah.
So telling me specifically of your career, Roy Chipman, what was bringing me back especially to that time? You guys were not a hotbed for basketball like today, for sure. Tell our audience kind of that. Again, you were at the Fitzgerald Fieldhouse. You weren't selling it out all the time. Kind of get us back to that time till you started starting to win in your career, for sure.
Well, I have to try to remember all that stuff there, you know. Don't forget I had some concussions, too.
So. Okay. Whatever you can bring up, no problem.
No, yeah, it was a time. When I got here, it was a time, I guess, you know, in 73. I got here in 77. 73, we had a team went to Elite Eight. That was Billy Knight now.
Yeah.
Then they got cold for a little while. And then they were looking for a way to get some fans back in the seats, you know, and I went to Fifth Avenue High School up until my junior year, and then went to Brashear my senior year. So, and we were ranked number two my junior year, and number three in the country my senior year. So they were looking. I was recruited real hard by Pitt for one, you know, local talent, you know. And then they figured they can put some more people in the stands, and I thought I was a pretty decent player. So with that all being said, though, we still had to build the program up, you know, and I think when I got here is when we start getting a little respect. You know, the teams in the Eastern Eight were Syracuse, Rhode Island, Villanova, Duquesne.
Yeah.
You know, things, pretty much a lot of teams that made up the Big East basketball today. And but it took some time to build, to get the people back. And we won some games and made it to the NCAA tournament 1 year, made the NIT a year. And
you lost to North Carolina the 1 year. That's how I remember correctly.
Right. Yeah, that was in the NCAA. We lost to North Carolina down in, I think it was Texas, El Paso.
Right.
I think it was down there, though, and Perkins and Worthy was on that team.
Yep, and I interviewed Sam Perkins and James Worthy. So just we definitely I have a history in that, and I remember. And I was like, "Do they have a chance, Mom, to beat North Carolina?" And she's like, "No."
And we was right there with them and everything, though. And the biggest claim to when I was here was when we beat Duke, and they was number two or three in the country, 1979, my sophomore year. We went down into their place and ended up beating them right at the last buzzer. And it was one of my highlights is because I made the last shot. You know, I got a steal, went down the length of the basket, shot a jumper, which, you know, if you see me play, I'm not really a jump shooter, but shot a jumper because the clock was running down, and then tried to bank it, and then it came off the glass, and I grabbed the rebound and laid it back up for the win. So, and then that's when we start getting a little notoriety and start playing, even our non-conference game, playing better teams and everything.
Remember the Eastern Eight was, the tournament was at Civic Arena, and how loud it was. against Duquesne. The city game was unbelievable then, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it's a shame that it's not like that now, because Duquesne was a powerhouse in itself also. I mean, he had some great talent to come through there. That guys who I played against coming all through high school and through the summer leagues, you know how big the summer leagues were here in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Around the time when I was growing up. So it made it real competitive for us, and everybody knew each other, knew everybody gaming, but it was just it was a slugfest. Bruce Atkins and I, John Moore and I, no matter who it was, so it was a slugfest.
Absolutely. We're talking to Sam Clancy, Pitt superstar, and also Cleveland Brown. For my Pittsburgh people, fans listening to the show saying Cleveland Browns, well, I've been having a few Cleveland Browns on the show, but again, that's the funny thing. I don't get a lot of locals, Sam, even though when I told you I had one of the stations in Pittsburgh, because it's just so easy to get, because of the international audience, I can reach out to so many people. Just think of getting an interview with James Worthy. What an unbelievable interview. But I'm more excited today interviewing Sam Clancy, because again, one of my childhood favorites. Now, Sam, what would you say was your biggest, greatest highlight? You said beating Duke, or what would you say in your career was your favorite thing you did at the University of Pittsburgh, basketball-wise?
Getting to the tournament was big for us, because that's what we were trying to do. We won the first game, got knocked out our second game. So that had to be big for me, because, all 4 years you want to be into the tournament. That's what you play for. They have a chance to get to the Final Four in the championship. But Duke still was the biggest. Playing Duquesne when I was a freshman, and I had a 20-point, 20-rebound game. That was huge because, one, I was a freshman, and two, the game before that, I forget who we played, I didn't have a great game. And then when they interviewed me, they go, Sam, well, you didn't play that well, and you got Duquesne coming up next week. And I said, hey, I promise I won't play like this against Duquesne. And ended up having a 20-point, 20-rebound game. So that sticks out right there, because I promised them that, hey, I'm not going to play bad against Duquesne, and I had a bad off night here at this game, though. So that was pretty exciting there, just almost like I was know what I was talking about.
Exactly. I'm pulling up your Wikipedia now, because, again, I've had head injuries just like you, Sam. I was a former professional wrestler, as I said. So I've had the concussion deal, too. So my memory, sometimes I have to look back and remind myself of back in that time. But one of your, highlights was also playing in the Pan Am Games, correct? And
don't let me forget about that, though. That was that whole year was a big year. Bobby Knight was the coach, who was one of the best human beings I've ever seen. I forget what everybody see on the court when he was coaching, and I would give him my soul. That's how good of a man, how much I think of him. He was a true gentleman, a teacher, a philosopher, and a motivator. I mean, he really was. And we spent about maybe 2 months together. If you count the tryouts and being with the team, that had to be one of the, I'm sure. I'm sorry I even forget that, dear Neil. But that is definitely one of my biggest two. And we got a gold medal from it, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
From San Juan, Puerto Rico.
So you're a gold medalist as well. But I'm telling you right now, the great career. But for our listeners out there, this guy was chiseled when he played at Pitt. He was not like the average-looking basketball player. You were definitely – and you were saying you look like DeJuan. No, I think you look like
– Well, I thought he got a little better than DeJuan. DeJuan had a little baby fat on.
Yeah, so were you huge about training? Was that a big regiment for you, hitting the weight room because of your...
Not really, because if you can remember, and you might have been too young to remember, growing up back in those days, weights weren't part of basketball players' workout at all, just playing. And, I think basketball players back in those days thought that if you lift weights, it would throw your shot off and make you stiff. And, everybody thought about that. And I never lift weights until I got to Pitt. And that's when those Nautilus machines came out. If you can remember that, you know, with the little chain and everything.
Yes, yes.
And that's the first time I ever lift weights. You know, but I just, I don't know. I guess I guess the Lord just formed my body that way. And with no work, all I did was play. I mean, stayed on the playground all the time. We lived on the concrete, you know. So, but that was my workout, and it kind of helped form my body. Now, I do think going to the University of Pittsburgh help form my legs, because if you know, walking up Suicide Hill every day to go to practice, it's going to form your thighs and your calves. And I just think that's the reason why I was able to play above the rim.
So another thing that I never knew, and that I'm searching back and forth from Wiki to the other again, because this has been crazy. Summer's crazy, Sam, because of my studios in my house, and I have been working and just jumped right into this interview. But there's so much interesting stuff just in your basketball. I knew that you could just talk about two careers, your basketball career and football career. But one other thing you did is you played in the CBA for a year for the Billings Volcanoes, and you averaged 11.5 points a game, 8.3 rebounds. Before you even went to pro football, you were a pretty good basketball player, even professionally.
Well, I got drafted in both sports, though. That's the reason why I end up in Billings, because I got drafted by the Phoenix Suns the third round. And I was the last one they let go. You know, we had two third rounders, and I was the second pick. They didn't have a second round. Larry Nance was the first pick, and Larry Nance ended up being one heck of a player for them and a good friend of mine. But Craig Dykema was his name, and he beat me out. And he was pretty good. He was a swing man. He could play shoot. He could play two and three. And I was only a power forward and a small one at that. You know, so and Phoenix, you know, I enjoyed being up there, though. Chuck Robinson was only 6'7". He was a power forward. So there was no room for another 6'7" power forward.
6'7",
But Chuck and Dennis Johnson, under their wing, they did take me under the wing and show me the ropes and teach me and everything, though. But Phoenix did tell me, Jerry Colangelo came and said, Sam, we're looking for a bigger power forward. You know, we think you're a good player, but we look for a bigger power forward. And then they said, but if you want to keep on working, we'd like to send you to the CBA. You know, if somebody go down, you know, maybe we'll call you up.
So they
don't want to recommend me go to the Continental Basketball Association.
So before you went to the CBA, I just wanted to tell you one of your pick career highlights is that you're the all-time reading rebounds leader at the University of Pittsburgh, you definitely have some accolades of career boards as the school's all-time leading rebounder at 1,342 career boards. And you think that Dwan might be
I'm the only probably what made me more proud of the rebound record even more so, which is really the same thing. I'm the only Pitt basketball alumni that's in the 1,000-point rebound club. You know, so I didn't know that until I came back here. But you know, I knew I was a rebound. I knew I had the rebound record, but I didn't know I was the only guy that was over 1,000 points, over 1,000 rebounds. I don't know the exact number, but I know it's over 1,600 rebounds and over 1,300 points. Or It might be vice versa. I don't know.
We're talking to Sam Clancy, former University of Pittsburgh star, all-time rebounding leader for the University of Pittsburgh, played in the CBA one year. And now, part two of the story, we start right now with your NFL career. Now, did you ever think, who came to you and said, you know, because you could have been a professional overseas and everywhere, but in basketball, whose idea was it for you to do football? Was it yours? Or how did it work? Did someone approach you saying you should try football?
Well, my 4 year, and it goes back to Pitt. My 4 years here at Pitt, I got approached every day by the coaching staff, particularly Foz Fazio, the late Foz Fazio, and head coach Jackie Sherrill. And Foz, I could talk to, because Foz really understands that, coach, I'm a basketball player. I can't play football. You know, I just did it for fun in high school and everything. But Jackie had such a presence. he was a little bit intimidating because, you know, Jackie Sherrill, you got Hugh Green, you got yes. Dan Marino, Richie Jackson, Mark May, Russ Grimm, you know, Jimbo Cobra. You got these guys on his team, and he chasing around, hey, Sam, play some football. You know, and Jackie Sherrill would tell you, he put the pressure, you, Sam, play some football, I'll make you All-American. And I'm like, Coach, I'm a basketball player. And Gerg would know. Gerg will say, Sam, that round ball is for you, not that other ball, you know. Stuff. So anyway, long story short, my senior year, Tim Gerg was resigned. And so this now I listened to Foge and went and tried out for the team in the spring. So I only stayed 2 weeks because this is before Roy Chipman came. Okay, and I practiced for 2 weeks, and Coach would set me up. Every Coach Sherrill would set me up in the practice. He'd send the first team defense in and bring the second team defense out, but leave the first team offense on. And they would run the play. They would run five plays directly at me every time. So this is against Mark May and Russ Grimm.
Yes.
So I don't know what I was doing. I really don't. I'm going to tell you the truth. But I slithered my way in on about four of those side plays and got in on a tackle some kind of way. Didn't know techniques. I'm trying to use my hands, but I'm going against these big horses and everything. But I still made the play with only like maybe 1 yard gain. And Coach Sherrill would pull me in his office and say, hey, I'm telling you, you can play this game. I'll make you All-American. Come with me. And long story short, Roy Chipman game.
Right.
Where Chipman came, and then he gave me the ultimatum. Sam, I need you. You're my captain. I need you on the basketball team. I gotta have if you're gonna play basketball. I need you just to concentrate on basketball. It gotta be one or the other. And right then and there, and basketball was my life. You know, football. I tried it out. It was fun.
Right.
And I went back to basketball. I couldn't let the basketball team down. And I would love to try to do both.
Yes.
But I don't think I would have been able to, I wouldn't be able to put the time into football like I did in basketball.
So they knew you were talented for football. So once you went to the CBA, your hope, I think, was the NBA.
That's where the first call came in the CBA. The first day I got to the hotel room in Billings, Montana, I had a call from the Seattle Seahawks and Chuck Allen. Player personnel director. He said, hey, Sam, Jackie Sherrill gave us your name. He said, even though you didn't play for him, you only lasted 2 weeks, that he thinks you're a heck of an athlete. How about you want to come to camp as a free agent? And I'm like, hey, but seriously, Neil, I looked out my window because the CBA was played like in the winter, December to March. I looked out my window, and it was like 24 inches of snow out there. And I said, sure. I'll give it a shot. So that's how it started. And on draft day, they ended up drafting me I got drafted like the 11th or 13th round. I don't know. They had like 13 rounds. I think I got drafted 11th or 12th round. And I got drafted as a tight end, you know, and because I wanted some glory. I wanted to score some touchdowns and all that, though. But it was on Jackie Sherrill's word that Seattle took a chance, and I lied to the Seahawks and how I got drafted, though, because they was going to bring me in with the free agents. But the free agents, they called and said, hey, has anybody else been contacting you? I got contacted, but not physically contacted or not by phone call. The Washington Redskins was sending some letters. And I said, the Washington Redskins have been in touch with me. And they said, hey, we'll call you back. So 2 minutes later, they call, hey, Sam, we just drafted you. And I'm like, what that mean? And he said, well, it means you get a little signing bonus.
All right.
Like that. So it was, hey, I mean, if I could do it all over again, I would do it the exact same way because I had so much fun in doing it.
And you had fun at the University of Pittsburgh, and that's the key component of this, and you're always going to be remembered as one of the best players, in my opinion, at Pitt, especially big men. When you think of big men, you think of DeJuan Blair, and you think of yourself, for sure. And then you also think of Charles Smith, Jerome Lane, but there's only a few, and and you definitely mention those. Okay, so let's jump.
Ironically, DeJuan and I, we consider big men, but really, DeJuan is 6'7", and I'm 6'6", so, and that's considered big men, but it means that we we end up playing against the big guys extremely well.
Exactly. So what's funny in the story is I didn't know this as I'm seeing Wiki. You were in the USFL after that. So 1 year in the, with the Seahawks, and then you end up in the USFL. So what happened? Did you not play a lot for the Seahawks?
I'm sorry.
No, did you not play a lot for the Seahawks?
No, the Seahawks, I did not play until the playoffs. Oh, my first year, now, I was on injured reserve because in training camp, this is when I was playing tight end. I caught a ball across the middle, so I'm still in that basketball mentality. And then the safety came and bam, hit me right on my knees. So I had a hyperextended knee. And this is one of the few years that they started their orthoscopic surgery. So this is in 82. So I go there, and then I'm in Landon training room. I'm disappointed because I think I'm going home. And Jack Patera came to me and said, Sam, we're going to put you on injury reserve. And I'm like, Coach, what did that mean? You know, and, you know, I'm young, you know, don't know what's going on. He said, what did that? He said, well, it means you get your full salary, which wasn't much, but it was great. NFL. And then he said, when you get healthy, you'll be able to practice with the team. So remember, those days, if you was on injury reserve, you can practice with the team. So once you get healthy, there was, you know, not like today where you're on injury reserve and you're out for the whole season, can never practice with the team again, even if you get healthy. So what happened was, how I really learned the game, Neil, was that we went on strike day. You have 52 days.
Right.
We went on strike. All right, so my knee healed up. All right, and we went on strike after the second game, I think. Second or third game, we went on strike. So my knee healed up, which was only was a 4-week deal. Okay, and then Mike Tice was teaching me the tight end position, and I picked up all the terminology. I was ready, you know. I was ready. I wasn't making the rookie mistakes like I've made. In camp, sometimes, you know, not knowing when to run the hot route or whatever, you know, that's another story, you know. But it gave me opportunity to learn from Mike Tice and to compete. And then I was ready for it next year at camp, right when and then all of a sudden coaches get fired. So Jack Butera is gone. in comes Chuck Knox, who was a Pittsburgh guy. You know, Chuck Knox come in there with a new staff, so here I am. I'm practicing all off season at tight end, running everything. And then get to training camp, the day of training camp. Now, I get up there, and I got a blue jersey in my locker. I'm on defense.
Oh, my.
Just like that, though, without – no coach came to me and said, Sam, I'm going to put you on defense or anything. But Jacob Green knew, and Jeff Brown knew all the – and Jeff Brown was there, came in the same year I came in, but he was a starting end. And all the other veterans on the team knew, but except for me.
Oh, wow.
And so I think the plan was that, hey, you know, okay, we move into defense, we cut him and be gone with him. You know, and come to find out, it was made for me. It really was. It was the things that George Dyer, the defensive line coach, was trying to teach is the things that I compared to, like, basketball for his doing things with your hands, the spin moves, give them a little shake and chop and all that stuff. So everything they was trying to teach, though, I kind of looked at it like, man, I can do this because we do drills like this.
Absolutely.
In basketball. So, you know, it was just a right fit for me, you know, and I felt comfortable. And then we had rookie camp a week before the veterans come in. So I made such an impression at rookie camp. And because of I really didn't get blocked running around the edge, okay? I mean, none of the rookies were able to touch me every time. They went, wow. And not impressed. I ran a 4.6, too, so I was only 250 pounds if I ran a 4.6. But we're playing in the 3.4. You know, it's tough to be 250 pounds in the 3.4 playing in. A hand on the ground in, you know that. But what happened was that I made the team. Suited up every game, Neil. Didn't get one regular season snap.
Till you said to the playoffs.
How about that? Then I went to George Dyer, and I should have went to him early. And I said, hey, coach, I can get you the quarterback, you know. He said no because we had one guy in there playing defensive tackle, and I never played defensive tackle. Don't forget now, I was and they put me in the defensive tackle, and we played Denver. Steve the Bird got my first sack and a half on Steve the Bird. And that's the first game I ever played get a sack and a half.
Wow.
And then the next game we played the Raiders, and I think I got a sack on Plunkett. But that's the year that the Raiders beat them twice in the regular season. They beat us in the playoffs, and they went to Super Bowl
and won.
And won.
Absolutely. Right. And they were a wild card team, so you guys were supposed to have the opportunity. So just to
and
go
that,
quick.
That's what led to the USFL.
Yes, and so you got a good contract with the USFL because they were trying to compete with the NFL, because really want to talk about the Cleveland Browns experience, especially the drives, and just specifically. So you had a pretty good career in the USFL for 2 years. How good were you when you played the 2 years?
Well, the USFL is a Frank Lattimore, who was the defensive line coach when I was playing tight end in Seattle, was the defensive line coach with the Pittsburgh Maulers. Okay, and Frank was great. He really was. And he taught me a lot, you know, and I really appreciate it because I went from playing a 3-4 there to playing a 4-3. And so I was on the edge. I ended up getting 16 sacks in the USFL, was second in the league. And sacks. So that's what led to the Cleveland Browns, even though the Maulers 1 year we folded and I went to the Memphis Showboats, had a chance to see the greatest defensive lineman of all time play with him, Reggie White.
Oh, wow.
You know, who was remarkable then. He was definitely the best, and I never thought nobody was better than Joe Green because I grew up on the Steelers. And John Banaszak was on that team. That was John Banaszak when he left the Steelers, came down to Memphis Showboats last year. And he kept telling me, Sam, this guy is better than Joe Green. I'm like, hey, ain't nobody better than Joe Green. Because, you know, you tell that's a true Pittsburgher, true Steeler fan. I'm like, nobody's better than Joe Green, man. Hey, watch what you're saying, Danny. And, he was remarkable. It was an honor, and it was really a pleasure. And I'm glad God blessed me to play with him because I've seen one remarkable athlete.
And you learned a lot probably from him. Both as a human being and also as a player from him.
Oh, man, he was the best. He was the best, you know. And I love him so much because when you say a curse word, boy, he'd holler across, hey, I heard you, Sam. Wash your mouth out with soap like your school teacher. He was great. He was great.
Really was. Oh, my gosh, Sam. You have so many stories. You played with Bobby Knight. You played with the great Reggie White. And then you go on to the Cleveland Browns, where our Pittsburgh people will want to say, let's turn off the radio. Just kidding. But you played 3 years with the Browns. And I want to just talk about two highlights, and I want you to promote what's going on at Pitt. And I'd love to have you down in the TV studio so I can meet you in person over at my Bethel Park studio at one point in time. So we can meet and do a one-on-one interview at the TV studio. So we could see face-to-face the two giants in Pittsburgh for wrestling and basketball. But tell us specifically your career with the Browns. You played really well. I remember you were a starter when you played at the Browns. But two big highlights of your career were back-to-back where the Browns were close to the Super Bowl. And Elway did it twice to you, didn't he?
Oh, man. I tell you, I'd never seen those games up until a couple of years ago.
Really?
Oh, yeah, never watched the highlights or anything.
Did you not want to watch it? Is that why?
Well, because we should have been in the Super Bowl one of those years, if both years, you know, and it still kicked me in the gut, you know, when you watch it. Even though they were great games, but it kicked you in the gut. And the first year, 86, now we had the number one or two defense, I think, in the NFL, at least in the AFC, I know that. And it might be the NFL. We had two top corners, Hanford Dixon and Frank Minifield. You know, Eddie Johnson, middle linebacker, Chip Banks and Clay Matthews on the outside. So, we were loaded pretty good. And I tell you, John Elway, they were winning the whole game. Then Bernie came down there in the fourth quarter, and we scored a touchdown, and we went up by 4 points or something like that, or went up by 2 points, or I don't even remember the score. So excuse me for that.
Yes.
But the one thing that I I think, as players, we have talked about after it all was over, after the draft, this is the draft I'm talking about, is that we had LA on the run most of the game by pressuring, blitzing him, keeping him off balance, had him thrown off his back leg. But then when we get down, when a minute and 58 seconds ago after we took the lead, and they're on a two-yard line. That's why it's called the drive, because they're on a two-yard line. And they got to go the length of the field, and then we stay back and just rush three the whole time and didn't get nowhere near our way, you know. And, well, we did. We got a third and 17. Here's where we got third and 17, because Dave Pizzulli had sacked John Elway. Third and 17. So we got it. All of a sudden, boom, he hits the pass. He gets 18 yards for a first down. I mean, it knocked the wind out of us.
Yes.
Knocked the wind out of us. Now, what people don't know is that in our huddle, our defensive huddle, there was almost a fight right then and there because I won't call it the players, because the player who got beat came back and, you know, he got away from me. And then he'd be like, he got away from me. And then one of our linebackers jumped, hey, man, you messed with our money. I should knock you out. And they say, I mean, you hardly can get the call in there. You know, man, you're coming here talking about you lost them, and this is our livelihood to get us to the Super Bowl and stuff. I mean, it literally was almost a fight, and the linebacker obviously would have won, you know, because he threatened. He said, man, I should knock you out right here. You know?
Oh,
so
wow.
I mean, this is – so that right, it knocked the wind right out of us. So then we never got him in another third and long situation. You know, John Elway, you give him that one shot, he took that one shot, then you're not going to get in that situation again. You know, and he went down there and – And we hit Vance Johnson somewhere right across the middle, and touchdown. So that knocked the wind out of me there.
And then we'll be nice and not have you relive the other one as well. Then the year after a back to back, but
but the other ones was just the other one wasn't as bad though. You know why? Because we were down 24-3 first half.
Right.
And then we fought And the two guys who got us back in the game, besides the defense playing well, two guys on offense that got us back in the game was Kozar and Ernest Miner. All right? Because the linebackers couldn't stay with Ernest Miner, so Kozar would just dump it off to him every time. All the way down the field, he would pick up the extra yard, keep the first down. And then, unfortunately, you know, everybody know what happened on the two-yard line, on the one-yard line, though. Today, that would have been a touchdown. The day's rule with him breaking the plane would have been a touchdown, you know, because he broke the plane, the ball's over, you know. But, you know, back then, you know, you had to secure the ball.
So, amazing enough, you had a great career with the Browns. You continue to play in the NFL with the Colts, and then you retired. Now, why are you back in Pittsburgh? You talked about this off air.
Importantly, I came back because when I left Pitt, I never finished my degree. All right. So when I came back, it was solely purpose to go back to school and finish my
degree.
That's
great.
You know, just in school arts and science. So 2007, I came back in 2005. 2007, I did finish my degree. And at the same time, I was helping in the weight room over there with the football team, doing some coaching. You know, so you know, that's the reason why I came back. And then I never thought that, you know, they're going to say, hey, Sam, we got a position for you. Would you like to work in our alumni relations in the Panther Club, which is our fundraising department, you know? But I only deal with Letterman.
Okay.
You know, I don't deal with the average alumni or typical alumni. I just deal with you had to play sports here, the male and female, for as any sports, you know, from basketball, football, down to volleyball, you know, and gymnastics. So that's what I pretty much do. And my job here is really to just to try to develop a relationship with these athletes, to get them to come back to Pitt and just let them know what the great things that are going on at Pitt.
That's great, because you're a great spokesperson for sure for the University of Pittsburgh, and that must be a great position. And definitely, we need to get a segment going for former players, athletes from Pitt to come on my show, because what a great stories of some of them that, you know, still bleed blue and gold. One story before you say hail to Pitt, Sam, is I had Chris Dolman on. I interviewed him at the Super Bowl last year, and he said, hail to Pitt. I got him to say hail to Pitt, and I was excited. And I've had Tony Dorsett Jr. on the show, Anthony Dorsett Jr. He said hail to Pitt. So any of the Pitt players I've had on say hail to Pitt, and it just makes me happy because that, again, I bleed blue and gold, never went to Pitt. My mom went to the University of Pittsburgh, and it's my favorite college team ever and always will. And it was just an absolute honor to have you on the show and talk about it. So for information on you, especially if former players are listening or anybody out there about Sam Clancy, where's the best place we can find you?
Oh, man. I tell you what, Neil, I am on all the social media networks, but I'm not a big social networking guy. All right, you found me and everything, and sent me a message on LinkedIn, and
you connected with me. Hey, so that's the big thing.
You might know my LinkedIn address. I don't even know it. Just tell the truth, though.
No, so you could just.
I'm on Twitter. I don't do. Hey, I've been on Twitter for 3 years, and I got 36 tweets. So
I have 16,000. No, I think 31,000 tweets I've done.
There you go. I'm on it though. I'm on Facebook, so you guys can look me up. And I wish I knew all the name of it, but like I say, I was just on it just to be on. And I think I'm more in everybody else's business than them and mine.
Well, I'll have to connect with you on Facebook as well. Good talking to you, Sam. We're definitely going to have you back at a time during the season to kind of come down to the Bethel Park studios so I can meet you face to face and we can continue the stories, because you should write a book. That's another thing I'm going to tell you that.
I got a lot of stories there, though, but I do appreciate hail the Pitt always.
Yes, hail the Pitt. Say it one more time. Hail the Pitt, and I love it. All right.
Hail the Pitt.
All right.
Hail the Pitt.
All right. Take care, Sam. Good talking to you, man.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, man. Okay. Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.